We're in the Summerfield Suites in West Hollywood. I'm about to talk to Robert Schwebel, PhD, author of How to Help Your Kids Choose to Be Tobacco-Free, a guide for parents of children ages 3 through 19. Welcome to bookchat.org.
It's good to be here.
Tell us first, how addictive is nicotine?
Well, nicotine is really the most addictive drug, and that's why we're in the midst of a health epidemic now, because more increasing numbers of children are using this drug. The rates with adults are declining, but the rates of use by children and adolescents is increasing.
So sort of the combination of advertising that makes it attractive and its intrinsic addictiveness is a pretty powerful sledgehammer wielded against people whose judgment has not yet matured.
Yes, I think the important thing is that this drug, and this drug alone, is the only drug in which $6 billion a year has been used pitching it to children, trying to make kids think that if you use this drug, you'll be cool, you'll be accepted, you'll be popular, you'll relax. And even, you know, equally important is considering this. The kids are at the point in life where they're trying to figure out who they are, and the tobacco company, unfortunately, has been giving them answers. Now, the tobacco company's been smart. They figured out that kids' attitudes about smoking are formed before that kids have access to use tobacco. So the advertisers are working on the kids' attitudes. That's why parents really have to fight back, and we have to work with kids when they're very young.
How young is young enough?
Well, because of the onslaught of all the advertising, I think that we have to start working with our children as young as age 3. For example, with my kids, some years ago, we were checking into a hotel room, and it really, really smelled bad from tobacco. My youngest son at the time was 3. We checked in, and the room just smelled so terribly that we had to change rooms. The next day, we had a discussion, just a little discussion. Boy, it's a smelly drug, and the kids agreed. 9 months later, my younger son was then 4. He came up to me, and he said, "Remember that smelly room? That tobacco really stinks." And I said, "It sure does." And we both agreed it's very unhealthy.
So the idea is that age-appropriate messages are what have to be used.
Yes, most definitely. With 3-4-year-old children, you don't start the big lecture about tobacco. You talk about situations as they arise. For example, if smoke drifts in your direction somewhere, or a relative is smoking or something like that. With, say, 5-8-year-olds, I think a good way, for example, to talk about tobacco, I talk about this in the book, is talking about the concept of pollution, asking a child, "What is pollution?" And most kids will say, "Oh, it's when things are dirty or people throw out their garbage." And you can talk with your kids and say that, you know, people pollute their bodies too. And smoking is one of the big ways they pollute their bodies.
Two questions about context. Compared to the effects of tobacco, how dangerous are drugs for which thousands of Americans, thousands of people in California, are routinely incarcerated?
Well, you know, I can't tell any of the statistics about the incarceration in California, but in terms of the health risks, there are more than 400,000 deaths attributable each year, premature deaths attributed to tobacco, 100,000 attributed to alcohol, and 20,000 for all the street drugs combined. So the health epidemic is really tobacco, and tobacco is the drug that's being pitched at children.
Well, at the risk of seeming sort of pseudo-ly naive, let me ask you that. Then if one drug kills 400,000 people a year and another drug kills 100,000 people a year and a whole collection of drugs kill 20,000 people a year, why are the two biggest killers legal and the ones with less effect illegal, and billions of dollars are spent incarcerating and prosecuting people for using them?
I can't give you answers as to why all that money is spent prosecuting people for those drugs. It is true that in different cultures, different drugs are accepted, and I think my concern about tobacco is that it's widely accepted among youth, and parents have to do something about that to help kids have negative attitudes about tobacco. I think it's unfortunate, if we're talking about drugs that are unhealthy for people, that the same tobacco industry that's pitching drugs at our children is also pitching drugs at women and children in third world countries all around the world.
They sound like bullies picking on the least defensive, the least people least capable of defending themselves.
Well, I think since it's become so clear what a health hazard tobacco is, increasing numbers of adults are deciding to quit. So as people decide to quit or die from their use of tobacco or die a natural death, some of these deaths are premature, of course, but as the smokers, the adult smokers leave the population, the tobacco industry is looking for replacement smokers. And if the thing that's so important is 89% of all smokers begin before the age of 18. So if we can help our kids as children, if we address this issue, and that's why I say all parents have to address this issue, 70% of all kids try tobacco. Each day, there are 3,000 more children and adolescents who try tobacco for the first time. We have to bring down those numbers. And in part, that's by changing attitudes about this drug and working on the attitudes of our children. And we have to be prepared in terms of how to respond when kids try tobacco for the first time.
You make the point several times in How to Help Your Kids Choose to Be Tobacco-Free that the smoking occurs within a social context, within a matrix, in which instant gratification, consumption, feeling good right away is the key element that spreads out even beyond tobacco to the entire culture. Talk about how that influences the effort to cut down on allowing or cut down on young people smoking.
Yes, well, there are two main factors there. One is that we do live in a very drug-oriented society where if you feel bad, the message is use a drug. And one of the things kids who experiment with tobacco do discover is that is a way to change how you feel. The other thing that I think is so important is that tobacco prevention is not only helping kids understand the danger of tobacco, because the fact is many people understand the danger of tobacco and still choose to smoke. The other part of prevention is really raising healthy children who know how to meet their needs in other ways. So, for example, if they tend to get angry, they know how to calm themselves down. If they are very relaxed, if they're very tense, they know how to relax themselves. We have to prepare kids to meet their needs without drugs if we want them to not be using these drugs. So really, what I write about is not only the dangers of tobacco, but how to arm children with skills that will allow them to meet their needs without tobacco.
In fact, the context is even larger than that, because what you're talking about in terms of helping them choose, I mean, the book doesn't say how to stop your kids from smoking. Right. It's how to help them choose to be tobacco-free. And that implies an entire constellation of family values, in a sense, of how to raise children, doesn't it?
Most definitely. It is. The book really is about raising children, and it is based on an understanding that truly we can keep our young children, we can prevent and stop our young children from smoking. But as they become teens and adolescents and young adults, they're going to make their own decisions. So if we do things right, we help them have really good values about maintaining their good health. And not only that, we help them think things through so they choose not to use tobacco of their own accord. Or if they have been using tobacco, if they have been smoking, or chewing it, they choose to stop.
You point out that no person starting to smoke thinks that they will become addicted.
Yes, and that's a very important point. When kids start smoking, one of the things they'll very often say is, oh, it's just a kid thing. I'm just going to do it for a little while. I'll stop in a few months. I'll stop in a year. Well, the average boy who becomes a regular smoker will smoke for, on an average, 16 years. For girls, the average is 20 years. They'll predict that they're going to stop within 5 years, 89% of them are wrong. And we need to help kids understand it's not a drug you play with. It's a very powerful drug.
You also point out in terms of peer pressure and being cool that 70% of young people don't smoke at all.
Yes. I mean, one of the important parts of initiation into tobacco is that kids will do it with other kids. And part of helping them develop the strength to go against the crowd or to be different is to help them understand that they're not in the minority. They're really not in the minority. Many people are, and hopefully increasing numbers of children will avoid this drug.
In fact, that's a trick of the advertising, to try to convince people that the minority is really the majority.
That is one of their tricks. And, you know, if you want to look at other tricks, They portray people as young, attractive, having a great time, having lots of friends, being accepted. They're slim, which is a big appeal, and the men are rugged. So they're selling this lifestyle, this image, rather than their drug. In fact, if you look very closely, cigarettes themselves are barely perceptible in the advertisements, and sometimes there isn't even any smoke. They're selling the lifestyle to kids.
How effective have all the we're not far from Sunset Boulevard here in West Hollywood, where the very famous Marlboro Man has been replaced by the very famous Impotence Man. How effective have all of these anti-tobacco commercials and ads been, do you think?
I have not seen the studies, the research on it, although I have heard, I believe I've heard that in California and Massachusetts, where there are strong campaigns, that they have been effective. I think we have to keep doing it. I think we should research it to see which methods work the best. I think it's very important. This is not any of the other drugs which are just kind of out there. This is a drug that an industry has been pounding into the minds of our children, that it's something that will make them cool and popular. We have to counter that image.
One part of counting that image is a fact you point out, that although you don't really back it up with a lot of statistics, I don't know if you can add them now, that people prefer to date, teenagers prefer to date other teenagers who don't smoke. What's the story on that?
Yeah, I can't, off the top of my head, I'm not sure of the statistics, but it's somewhere around 70% of teens, when they're asked, would you rather date a smoker or a non-smoker, they say they would definitely prefer a non-smoker. And, you know, kids have a brain on their head. They'd rather be around someone who smells good. And by the way, those are the sorts of factors that are so often important with teens in their decision-making. Sometimes, you know, you tell kids about these diseases you get later in life, and it doesn't have a very big impact. But if you tell them that you're going to smell bad, your hair will smell bad, you won't be so attractive to your peers, things like that, that helps them. And the other thing that I think is so important is to help children and youth understand that the health risks are not only way off in the distant future. Any single cigarette is harmful. It hurts the respiratory system. That's why all the smokers cough and all those respiratory illnesses.
Say something about the specific moral or tactical dilemmas of parents who are addicted to nicotine and smoke cigarettes and try to convince their children not to.
Yes, those parents are often worried that they will appear hypocritical, that they're saying to their children, do as I say, not as I do. Well, for those parents, my first recommendation, the best thing they could do for themselves and for their children would be to quit. However, as I said, this is a very powerful addictive drug, and despite the fact that 70% of all smokers would like to quit, many of them have felt that they've been unable to do it. So what I say to parents is they have to swallow their pride and say, you know, despite the fact I smoke and I regret this, it's very, very important that you don't smoke, that this is a very, very dangerous drug. And I think a smoker can say, I don't want you to repeat the mistakes I made. I want to spare you from that.
I mean, in fact, their own suffering ought to be some kind of evidence to their kids, and if they can deal with it some in an appropriate way, they can take advantage of it.
Yes, they can, and in fact, sometimes it's quite paradoxical that kids who grow up in families, even though the statistics show that more kids smoke if they grow up with smoking parents, it also can work the other way around, where kids remember being in a car that really smelled and see their parents sort of desperately wanting a cigarette and rushing out of a movie theater or an airplane, and that can help kids decide not to smoke.
You talk about a DNQ, a drug neediness quotient. What's this concept?
Yes. The DNQ, the drug neediness quotient, really helps explain why people smoke when, in fact, so often many people know about the harm and the dangers of smoking. Well, the explanation is like this, that when people make health decisions, for example, whether to smoke, what they're usually doing is weighing what they get from the smoking or from the activity against what the cost or the harm is. So on the one hand, people may be very aware that tobacco is dangerous. But on the other hand, they may like the benefits so much. The truth is, tobacco does relax people, does calm them down. The truth is, it can give them a little burst of energy. It is a way to become more popular and accepted with certain peers. So if kids are unable to do these things without drugs, if they can't make friends, calm themselves down, etc., without drugs, then they have a high drug neediness. And their need for drugs can outweigh their concern about the harm from their use of tobacco.
In fact, there are powerful social forces from thousands of magazine covers with anorexic women on them, to thousands of ads telling people that they need to consume and feel good right away, that raise everyone's drug neediness quotient. That, in fact, in a certain sense, you can see the entire economy, or large, significant portions of it, are geared precisely to create a higher drug neediness quotient, or a food neediness quotient, or a car buying neediness quotient. Say something about that. I don't expect you to have the answer to that, but you could comment on how it affects the tobacco habits of millions of teenagers.
Sure, we most definitely live in a society that says if you want to feel good, buy something or consume this or consume that, and tobacco is really just part of it. I think it is a very important part of it because we're in the midst of a pediatric health epidemic with more and more kids choosing to smoke. So, we live in a drug-oriented society, and I think we have to help our kids and as parents say to our kids, look, drugs will make you feel better, tobacco will make you feel better, but it's our job as your parents to help you learn healthy ways to meet those needs. That's our job.
One thing I think I can unequivocally recommend that people consume is a copy of How to Help Your Kids Choose to Be Tobacco-Free, a guide for parents of children ages 3 through 19 by Robert Schwebel, Ph.D. Thanks very much for writing it, and thanks for talking to us on bookchat.org.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
A healthy one, too.
Yes, definitely.